Srimad Bhagavatam 6th Canto, Chapter 5, Narada Muni Cursed by Prajapati Daksha, Text 17. Translation. Narada Muni had said that there is a house made of 25 elements. The Haryashvas understood this analogy. The Supreme Lord is the reservoir of the 25 elements, and as the Supreme Being, the conductor of cause and effect, he causes their manifestation. If one engages in temporary fruitive activities, and knowing that Supreme Person, what benefit? If one engages in temporary fruitive activities, not knowing that Supreme Person, what benefit will he derive? Purport. Philosophers and scientists conduct scholarly research to find the original cause, but they should do so scientifically, not whimsically, or through fantastic theories. The science of the original cause is explained in various Vedic literatures. Atato brahma jigyasa janmadyasya yataha. The Vedanta Sutra explains that one should inquire about the Supreme Soul. Such inquiry about the Supreme is called Brahma-jigyasa. The absolute truth, tattva, is explained in Śrīmad-Bhāgavatam. Vadantita tattva-vidas tattvam yajñānam-advayam parameti paramātmeti bhagavān iti śabdhyate. Learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavān. The absolute truth appears to neophytes as impersonal Brahman, and to advanced mystic yogis as Paramatma, the super soul. But devotees who are further advanced understand the absolute truth as the Supreme Lord Vishnu. This material cosmic manifestation is an expansion of the energy of Lord Krishna, or Lord Vishnu. Ekadeśastatasyāgne jyotsnāviṣṭarane yata parasya brahmana shaktis tateram akilam jagat. Whatever we see in this world is but an expansion of various energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is like a fire that spreads illumination for a long distance, although it is situated in one place. Vishnu Purana. The entire cosmic manifestation is an expansion of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, if one does not conduct research to find the supreme cause, but instead falsely engages in frivolous temporary activities, what is the use of demanding recognition as an important scientist or philosopher? If one does not know the ultimate cause, what is the use of his scientific and philosophical research? The Purusha, the original person, Bhagavan, Vishnu, can be understood only by devotional service. Only by devotional service can one understand the Supreme Person who is behind everything. One must try to understand that the material elements are the separated, inferior energy of the Lord, and that the living energy is the Lord's spiritual energy. Whatever we experience, including matter and the spirit soul, the living force, is but a combination of two energies of Lord Vishnu, the inferior energy and the superior energy. One should seriously study the facts concerning creation, maintenance, and devastation, as well as the permanent place from which one never need return, yet vittana navartante. Human society should study this, but instead of culturing such knowledge, people are attracted to temporary happiness and sense gratification, culminating in bottomless, topless passion. There's no profit in such activities. One must engage himself in the Krishna consciousness movement. Om Vijnanachimanandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Nritam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivastava Gaurava Govinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So there you have it. You want to be saved from bottomless, topless passion? There's no profit in such activities. One must engage himself in the Krishna consciousness movement. Movement means you're going somewhere. It doesn't mean to stand in one place. What's the plan? You're supposed to be going back to Godhead. Where's the plan? How do you mold your daily activities so that you attain the goal? How many of you jump in a car and just say, wherever it goes, I take it a half a kilometer at a time? No one does that. When you get into a car, when you get on a plane, you have the destination firmly in mind. Suppose there's traffic, or suppose the airplane ride encounters turbulence. You just tolerate it. What do you think? I'll be at my destination. The whole purpose of me being in this vehicle, the whole purpose of my being on the airplane is to get to the destination. This is practical. The Bhagavatam is restructuring your patterns of thinking so that you understand differently what is scientific and what are facts. To read the Bhagavatam submissively means to allow the Bhagavatam to work its show upon you, to do its thing, so to speak. And it does. Let's look at this purport, and then we'll look at the situation of Narada Muni's recruits, the Haryashras. Srila Prabhupada writes that philosophers and scientists conduct scholarly research to find the original cause, but they should do so scientifically, not whimsically or through fantastic theories. In other words, he's saying that they claim to be doing scholarly research, but they actually don't know how to do the scientific procedure. Sometimes non-devotees object. Well, how can you say that bhakti is science? But there is a different standard of science that Bhagavatam is advocating. In other words, without going into so many words, Srila Prabhupada is asserting that the bhakti science stands on its own merit, even though it is not exactly like the materialistic science. And why should it be exactly like the materialistic science when it's dealing with a different energy? So, we give credit where credit is due. If someone comes to survey the land here with their surveying instruments, yes, that is technology, that is scientific advancement, very nice. But when that same person, through scientific instrumentation and logic and analysis, tries to speculate what is the ultimate cause of all causes, then we have to say, you're out of your league. So we give credit where credit is due. There is inferior knowledge and there is superior knowledge. So when you read here that philosophers and scientists conduct scholarly research to find the original cause, but they should do so scientifically, Srila Prabhupada is letting everyone know that bhakti is a science of a different type, but indeed it is a science and the most important science, which will give you pratyaksha avagamam dharmyam, direct perception of the self. Therefore, it is raja vidya, the king of knowledge, the perfection of all religion. Later in this purport, he says, whatever we experience, including matter and the spirit soul, the living force, is but a combination of the two energies of Lord Vishnu, the inferior energy and the superior energy. One should seriously study the facts. That's what an ordinary scientist says. Just study the facts. Don't just believe. Don't just be true believers. So Shiva Prabhupada is taking their lingo and using it his own way. One should seriously study the facts, as Lord Krishna has presented. Don't be a believer. Don't be an illusion. So this is a reverse strategy here. To get you to think. Because otherwise, you'll become trapped. Without regular hearing of Bhagavatam, without regular reading of Bhagavatam, you'll be trapped in conditioned patterns of thought. Okay, I'm going to believe in Krishna. I'm going to believe in devotional service. I'll see how it goes. Because it does feel nice right now, and the prasad tastes good, and it's nice to be around devotees, you know. They don't stab you in the back. So I guess that's just it, you know. We'll just see how things pan out. But then, in the back of your mind, is always the thinking, what about the facts, though? What about the science? The scientists, what about that? So therefore, you need to constantly hear to make sure that contaminated patterns of thinking don't overtake your spiritual efforts. Real science needs to understand the ultimate cause. We give credit where credit is due about understanding intermediate causes. And even that today is done very imperfectly with great hazards, as you can see, in terms of the environment. Let's look at the Haryasvas. What happened? As you heard, wherever you look, whatever you see, that's a combination of the Lord's inferior and superior energy. You're learning how to see. We have this arrogance that I know how to see, and whatever should be understood should be within my range of vision. The Bhagavatam humiliates you, presenting basically an overload, we might say, of phenomena that are beyond the range of your ordinary perception. So you have a few choices. You can rebel. What is all this? Or you can think, there's a possibility that this could be true. Let me just put brackets around it and in my mind and just keep on going and see how things reveal themselves to me. That's a legitimate way to deal with Bhagavatam. Especially when that endeavor, after you put that stuff you can't understand in brackets and proceed further, especially when that effort is accompanied by humble, selfless devotional service, then you can truly understand Srimad Bhagavatam. And you'll get a taste. Vasudeva Kataruchi Sanmaha Sevaya Vipra. By rendering service to the devotees of the Lord, you get a taste, Kataruchi, for talks about Lord Krishna. So it's not that you're just perpetually walking around with these things you can't understand in brackets in your mind. And after a while, there's a huge burden on top of your head of things you can't understand. Meanwhile, your senses are aching for, well, anyway. And the heart is aching for companionship and the flow of emotions on the material plane. And so here you are with all these things you don't understand in Srimad Bhagavatam stacked up over your head. And then your senses are aching, your heart is longing. And just when you start to think like that, you realize, wow, I'm just going to collapse one day. What is the saving grace? Devotional service. Of course, hearing Bhagavatam is devotional service, but when you accompany it by humble, selfless, practical engagement of your senses in devotional service, everything starts to click for you. You can mark it down in your life. As soon as you make that decision, I'm going to render humble, selfless devotional service. Watch the changes, the transformation begin. And as soon as you make a decision to engage in bhakti just to satisfy you, you'll make some spiritual advancement, but you'll be left wide open for attacks from illusory energy and the usual upsets that come in this material world. You'll be left unprotected. You'll be standing on your own strength. And how great is that? So the future is not hopeless. The future is bright as long as you proceed scientifically and listen to the facts. Okay, let's look at the Haryastras. And their father, Prajapati Daksha, who begot 10,000 sons in the womb of Panchajani, Asikmi, his wife. Well, with ordinary sense perception, you might be thinking, wow, very tolerant wife. 10,000 sons. And Prajapati Daksha seems to indeed be quite active. But you have to understand that persons are more powerful. This is yoga power. Anytime you see a special ability, birds flying in the sky, worms tunneling through the earth, eating earth as they go, even little babies making that high-pitched shriek which no adult can imitate, this is yoga power. He explained before. And therefore, Krishna is known as Yogeshwara, the master of all yoga power. Indeed, Yogeshwareshwara, the master of the masters of yoga power. He's got it all. So Prajapati Daksha, his name Daksha means expert. But his expertise manifests in terms of production. Indeed, he's a Prajapati. He's supposed to populate the universe. So he just has a different caliber of ability than the normal dads of today. And his wife has a different caliber of ability than the normal mums of the day. This is yoga power. So, Daksha is not an ordinary person, but nevertheless, Shukadeva Goswami says, Vishnu Maya Upabrinhita. He's made capable by the illusory energy of Lord Vishnu. Nevertheless, although the activity is impelled by the illusory energy of Lord Vishnu, Narada Muni is going to turn the outcome into something else. That's preaching. Srila Prabhupada once defined, preaching means where there is no interest in Krishna, you manage the circumstances, you structure the circumstances so indeed a spark of interest can develop. In other words, you just don't sit back and say, oh, the people aren't interested, the people aren't coming, what can you do? No, preaching means arranging circumstances, structuring the environment, so even though there's no interest, somehow the people develop a spark of interest. So Narada Muni is going to take what was impelled by the illusory energy of Lord Vishnu and turn the result into something else. Now, it's not that Daksha was, like, a miscreant or totally off. Just see his program. He wanted his 10,000 sons to become first-class householders in terms of the Vedic rituals, pious activity. In other words, he wanted his sons to be like persons you won't find in the material world these days. Just completely precise in their execution of punya, good karma, ritualistic activities for the elevation to the heavenly planets. In other words, how to live in this world so that the good karma is maximized and the bad karma is minimized. And obviously, in that process of yajna, sacrifices and rituals, Lord Vishnu is referred to. But the main point is how to live a well-structured, high-class material life with devotion there also. Prajapati Daksha understood, if my sons are going to be proper husbands, proper family men, proper fathers, if they're going to be proper citizens of this world, what is it they need to do first? What's that horrible word that we all shiver in fear when we hear? Tapasya. Austerity. The curse word of Kali Yuga. Daksha understood that even for pious material purposes, his sons have to first perform austerity. Then they'll have the training, the rigor, and the strength to be upstanding fathers, husbands, and citizens. He was not raising sons for the bhakta program. He was not raising his sons to live in an ashram all their life. He was not raising his sons to be immediately cultivated in Krishna consciousness. He was raising his sons to be first class, pious, controlled, prosperous enjoyers of material happiness with some devotion to Vishnu there also. He understood that point, that even if you want to be successful in material life, you need to perform austerity. That concept is gone today. It used to be that a young person would think, well, I have to study hard in school, and I have to study hard in the university, and then after all that endeavor and austerity, my future will be successful. But now, everyone thinks, just have a good time right now. And the universities are having a good time. In fact, university is where the super parties are, the super drunkenness, the super degradation. You somehow or other stumble your way through the university in a cloud of smoke and a flood of alcohol and innumerable hookups. And then it's time for a job. The whole concept of austerity is lost. I remember my mother and father, they drilled into my head and my brothers and sister at the very beginning. If you want a good future, you've got to endeavor now. You've got to go through the austerities of education and discipline now. We don't care what the rest of the kids in the neighborhood are doing. That means don't go near a basketball court. You're not going to be a basketball player. Do you understand? Besides, all the bad guys hang out at the basketball courts, and all the bad girls are watching them. You will stay home and study year after year. Do you understand? And if you want a little pocket money, go out and get a part-time job. And don't you ever get into any kind of legal trouble if you want peace in this home. So you're all trained up like that. You've got to be austere now. You've got to study. You've got to stay away from the girls. Otherwise, your future's ruined. Austerity now. Enjoyment later. So I remember when I was at 8 years old. No, maybe 10 years old. My cousin, brother, he was about 11, and my younger brother was 9. So we were playing, and we decided to go to the railroad yard, where there was a lonely track, and there was one boxcar, freight car, parked there. So we were climbing up on the car, the freight car having a good time, Then this car with a red light on top drives up. And the sign says, "Railroad police." This big guy gets out. "Halt! Criminals!"
Criminals?
We're just playing. That was a lonely freight car and a lonely track. "Criminals, come here!" We were trembling in fear. "What's your name? I want to know your address. I want to know everything about you." We told him our names and address. And he said, "Do you realize what's happening now? You are going to get a criminal record for trespassing. You have broken the law." We were just like, "Oh no, our future is ruined. We'll never be." I remember I was saying, I was just 10 years old, "We'll never be able to get jobs. We're cripples. We got a police record. It's everything mother said not to do." My cousin, he was 1 year older. He was a bit more, he wasn't so innocent, so he just kind of pretended to be afraid and kind of chuckled a bit. And he was from another city. But my brother and I, we were just trembling. "Oh no, we've done it. We have, it's called, in New York City, it's called a JD card, juvenile delinquent card. It means it's on your file. You are a juvenile delinquent. You're tagged for the rest of your life. There's no atonement." So then the railroad cop told us, "All right, I want you to go home and immediately tell your parents what's happened." "Yes, yes, we'll tell them." "If you don't tell your parents, it'll be even worse for you." So we went home. On the way walking home, my cousin was like, "Don't tell, don't tell." My brother and I, we were convinced, "No, we have to do the right thing. Jesus says to be honest. The Bible says, honor thy father and mother. We have to do the right thing. Honor thy father and mother so thy days may be long on the earth." We knew all the Bible verses, Old Testament and New Testament. So we went home, crying, we told Father, and he took it very seriously. All right. He gave us the ultimate punishment. Stay inside without going out the whole day. Horrible. Stay inside on a summer day and not go out. All you could do is watch TV, watch baseball games, and I would watch baseball games. My younger brother would watch silly comedies and stuff like that. So that was horrible. I remember just sitting there. I can't go outside. We didn't know. At the same time, my father, he jumped into his car and went out looking for the railroad cop because he was very angry. "Why are you putting such fright into my kids?" My father was a ranking administrator in New York City Police Department, so he was going to tell the guy, "I think it's..." "What are you doing making children paranoid like this?" at least then, this is back in the 50s, late 50s, there was some understanding. You had to be good, you had to be disciplined as children. And then the future of money and enjoyment would open up. My mother drilled us again and again. "If you want to be successful in this world, you must be 3 things. You must be a scholar, a capitalist, and a Christian. Do you understand?" So, Daksha is, of course, on a material level of his own. Yet he understands my children have to perform austerities if they're going to be proper family men, if they're going to have a successful life in this world. So without any hesitation, he sent his children to a place where there were many sadhus, sages advanced in spiritual consciousness. Without any hesitation, he did that. So there, his sons began engaging in all the activities of spiritually advanced persons. They were performing severe austerities. Why? Shukadeva Goswami says, to fulfill their father's desire. Because, he says, they were all alike in being very gentle and obedient to the orders of their father. Their father had ordered them, make children, because that was the father's role, to populate the universe with his yoga power of being able to have thousands of sons at once. So they did that, gentle and obedient. This is real civilization. And with that gentleness and obedience, they follow the order of their father and engage in severe austerities. Well, Shukadeva Goswami explains that they were becoming purified by all these activities in the association of holy sages, and naturally they became inclined toward the activities of Paramahansas by association. I was explaining to some devotees the other day that we're not into arguing with people. We're not into defeating persons in debates. We are into giving the association that will change the consciousness. I was explaining, I've noticed a difference even just in New Zealand in the past 15 years. When I first came in 93, 90, like that, people were very sharp and wanted to discuss philosophy, even the young persons in their 20s, they wanted to present their speculations. And so, yes, you could get into a kind of debate in such a way that bystanders and witnesses to the discussion would become impressed and inspired to take up Christian practices. But that was 15 years ago. It's quite different now. The brains have become quite a bit more dulled and deadened. And so, the best thing is to give persons very attractive, supportive association. And in that way, they'll gradually become inclined to listen. Of course, as the global economic meltdown continues, persons' heads are starting to soften. I've noticed the difference even in Australia, the land of no worries, mate, where life is a beach. Beach culture. Up until January, everyone was cruising merrily along. There's New Zealand's been in economic recession, for some time now. But Australia, the tsunami hadn't hit yet. And so, in Sydney, everyone was carefree. Everything's all right. No worries. Australia's different. We've got all those natural resources, those mineral ores that the Chinese want. We'll be unaffected by the global meltdown. That was the propaganda. Well, a few months ago, that all changed. One of their ministers of parliament got on nationwide radio and broadcasted, no one's job in the whole country is safe. Not one person's job in this country is safe now. And then he pointed to the radio interviewers, not even your job is safe. So, of course, the next day, the opposition political party accused him of spreading fear amongst the nation. But the people are afraid. I was doing some programs, as I always do, and at someone's house, where they invite Australian people for various programs, contemporary topics. Usually 30 well-heeled, professional, young and middle-aged persons come. It's very nice. So this time, we did the theme, Living Without Anxiety. I got the idea from the loft because Baba Sundi had told me that the biggest response to seminars at the loft is for things like stress management. Because people are stressed out. But in Australia, it wasn't like that for so long. Just, you know, everything's fine, eh? No worries. Great day outside. Let's go surfing.
So, as I said, usually 30 people come along for a seminar.
All
very well-to-do persons. So, living without anxiety. 80 people showed up at the house. All of anxiety.
What's happening to the world? This is the lucky country. What's happening?
Of course, the Kiwis like to point out that lucky countries have water. Not just mineral ores. Human beings can't drink iron ore and gold and uranium. Food doesn't grow with, you know, iron ore, uranium, and gold. Food needs water to grow.
They're in anxiety. What's happening with the material world? Suddenly the heads have become softer a bit. You're seeing a constant refrain in the verses that Narada Muni is has presented to the Haryaswas, or in Shukadeva Goswami's expansion of the message that Narada Muni gave. You're seeing, kimasat karma vibhavet. What's the use of all this materialistic activity? Now these boys, the Haryaswas, were ready for pious activity, punya, to likes and on the scale that you've never seen in the world today. But still, Narada Muni said, what's the use of all this? This is how high the standard of the Bhagavatam is. Narada Muni was feeling compassionate. These boys are going through such severe austerities and penances. They're associating with Paramahansas. Indeed, they're being attracted by the nature of the Paramahansas. All to just go home and have a family of pious activities? Narada Muni decided, I've got to intervene in this. Now, try to understand his compassion. It's not that he was like agitating unnecessarily. It's not that he was causing a disturbance. He saw they have the inclination toward the activities of Paramahansas. Yet, their father has ordered them to increase the population. So they're performing severe austerities to fulfill the father's desire. So Narada Muni just put 1 + 1 = 2 in his eyes. Of course, as you'll hear later in the chapter, Daksha had a different calculation of 1 + 1 = 2. Therefore, he had a different reaction. But Narada Muni, you know, he's cherry picking. He sees some luscious cherries hanging, and wow, look at this, these boys, they're prime candidates. Let me give them the real fruit of their austerities. So please understand that. The boys had the inclination. They had the association. They were attracted to these activities. At the same time, they're being dutiful to their father. So Narada Muni mercifully is coming along to do something about the situation. I think even to this day, sometimes our devotees don't understand Narada Muni's motivation. Because it seems like the boys were, you know, they were pretty good. What's wrong with, you know, performing austerities in order to have a family and have lots of kids? What's wrong with that? You see, Narada Muni could shrewdly understand this is all about good karma. This is not about bhakti. Narada Muni's prejudice is not against any ashram.
Oh, they're going to become householders. Let me disrupt it.
No, it's not like that. He saw they're going to become simply good karmis, that's all. Good, pious workers. And I want bhaktas, devotees. Devotees with devotion. Our policy is grihe, tako, vane, tako, sada, hari, bhogata. Whatever you are, household, sannyasi, brahmacharya, vanaprastha, just chant Hare Krishna, put Krishna in the center. So Narada Muni was not just against that principle. Of course not. But he saw they're being trained up for very elevated,
the most refined level of material life. Good karma. So, therefore, he entered upon the scene, and he worked his wonders. So, what did he say to the boys? Just to refresh your memory. My dear Hyaspas, you have not seen the extremities of the earth. There is a kingdom where only one man lives, and where there is a hole from which, having entered, no one emerges. A woman there, who is extremely unchaste, adorns herself with various attractive dresses. And the man who lives there is her husband. In that kingdom, there is a river flowing in both directions, a wonderful home made of 25 materials, a swan that vibrates various sounds, and an automatically revolving object made of sharp razors and thunderbolts. You have not seen all this, and therefore you are inexperienced boys without advanced knowledge. How then will you create progeny? In other words, he deftly and so concisely, this is speaking like a sutra. Sutra, concise knowledge, eloquently spoken. With just a few sentences, he gave them a whole world view that created doubt in their mind. You don't understand all this? You're inexperienced boys without real knowledge. How, lacking all this, are you going to go and create progeny? He got them thinking. And then, of course, narratively understood the nature of Vedic family life, where the father's order is topmost. He said, alas, your father is omniscient. In other words, you've got another father you don't know about. Not only do you not know about that real father, the Purusha, the Supreme Person, but you do not know the actual order of your father. So, you don't know the real father, you don't know the actual purpose of the real father. What are you doing then, going and having children? One can understand this on different levels. No one should take any responsibility for anyone without knowing what you're doing, knowing the real father and the actual purpose of the real father. Therefore, as you know, Lord Rishabhdev says, Guru Sasasap, Swajano Sasasap, don't be a guru, don't be a mother, don't be a father, don't be anything, a teacher, don't take any responsibility for any living entity unless you can save them from the cycle of repeated birth and death. In other words, Lord Rishabhdev is saying, don't give me that love stuff. I don't want to hear it. Can you exercise responsibility? Don't tell me about this, I really love her, that's all that counts. We're attracted to each other. We really care for each other. Lord Rishabhdev is saying, just the facts, please. Let's be scientific. Are you able to rescue your dependents from the cycle of repeated birth and death? If you're not, don't take responsibility. Without knowing the actual purpose of your father, Shukadeva Goswami says, how will you create progeny? In other words, how will you take responsibility? All right. Put yourself in the shoes of the Haryasvas. You've heard that sutra from Narada Muni, which indeed Shukadeva Goswami admits. The sutra is enigmatic. It's a puzzle. The Haryasvas, however, considered those puzzling words of Narada Muni with their natural intelligence. Manishaya, they possessed the power to consider. That's culture, that's civilization. Because of their gentleness, their obedience, their proper upbringing. Even though the central purpose wasn't bhakti, still, they had some refined intelligence, manishaya. Considering those words, without any help from others, Shukadeva Goswami said, they understood. Now, if someone had said that sutra to you, what would you have done? My dear ladies and gentlemen, you have not seen the extremities of the earth. There's a kingdom where only one man lives, where there's a hole from which, having entered, no one emerges, so on and so on. Oh, yeah, I understand. I'll drop this world. I'll renounce everything. Now, this is the level of intelligence in a real human civilization. Earlier in Bhagavatam, Shukadeva Goswami uses that word, manishaya. The Bhagavatam is meant for those with refined intelligence who can actually consider clearly. So, they heard those words, they understood. People aren't so sharp these days, obviously. There's no real human culture. They're not even the basics, the basic ingredients of civilized life. So therefore, people need help. That they need help doesn't mean we should just throw up our hands and say, oh, their heads are so dull, the habits are so bad. Pulling ourselves out of that category and putting ourselves in a high position. Look at them. Oh, disgusting. Oh, you are no brains. No. We consider ourselves to be worse. It's just that we have the good fortune of having taken up Krishna consciousness. So what is the conviction of the teacher of Krishna consciousness, the cultivator? What's the conviction of someone who's reaching out to help others find their way out of the material world to Krishna's lotus feet? What's the conviction? That I know that this person right now is acting so degraded and so foolishly and so ignorantly. But if that person will take up the process of bhakti, this person I'm talking to, this person I'm cultivating, will be a better devotee than me. It's just a question of time. Srila Prabhupada also considered himself to be the servant of his disciples. He said once, I consider that all my disciples are spiritual masters whom Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakura, my Guru Maharaj, has sent to me to train up. This is not feigned humility. This is the actual heart and mind of someone who wants to serve Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. People aren't like the Haryastas. You're going to hear how in one swoop, all 10,000 Haryastas just took up renounced life. It's a rare person today who responded in that way. That means we have an opportunity to do more service. Because people are not so intelligent, you can do more service for Krishna by arranging the culture, the education, the love, the care, so they'll take to Krishna consciousness. It's more service opportunity. So don't be discouraged. Just be greedy for the more service. Once Srila Prabhupada commented that you all can't perform austerities like the great mystic yogis. You can't spend 60,000 years of your life in samadhi alone on top of the mountain in the Himalayas in freezing cold and scorching sun and eating only the leaves that fall from the trees, taking a breath every few days, take a breath of air every few days. You can't do things like that. So what is your austerity? He said, your austerity is dealing with crazed persons and making them say, that's your austerity. Of course, they shouldn't be too crazed for living in ashrams and temples. But still, more or less, everyone is mad because you have to be mad to forget Krishna. How can you forget that unlimited source of beauty? You have to be mad. You have to be haunted by a ghost. One thing we have to be clear about in understanding real human culture so that we can indeed practice spiritual culture. There has to be a gap between material attraction,
You're feeling attraction materially for something or someone, and the action of attempting to fulfill that attraction, that desire. In that gap between, oh, I feel attracted, well, what am I going to do? And doing or not doing, in that gap, that's where bhakti works its wonders. You should not feel depressed that you feel material attraction. And you know what the prime material attraction is. Pumsastya mithuni bhavamita. Attraction between male and female is the basis of material existence. So our program is not to be depressed about it. Oh no, I feel attraction. Oh no, I feel a pull from this one or that one. My mind is just filling up with this and that. My heart is longing. My senses are rumbling. Don't be depressed. That is natural and normal. This is a normal thing in this world. But just because you feel that way, just because you feel agitation, attraction, allurement, doesn't mean you must act on it. So this is human culture. And in that human culture, spiritual culture takes birth. In the gap between feeling agitated, feeling attracted, and not acting on it. Again, quote from Srila Prabhupada, it is not unusual to be agitated. But it is unusual not to act on it. So that is what makes the Hare Krishnas unique. Their program is not to act on the attraction or the agitation. So always think about this gap between feeling agitated, feeling attracted materially, and acting on the agitation or attraction. In that gap lies the opportunity to make spiritual advancement. In the so-called culture of today, there's no gap. You feel attracted, you feel agitated, it's the same thing as acting on it. There's no delay, there's no consideration, there's no separation between feeling something and acting on it. Just, let's go. But in real human culture, there is a significant gap. And in that gap lies your opportunity for pleasing Krishna. You remember your initiation vows. You remember knowledge. It is knowledge that allows you to take advantage in that gap. Narada Muni is giving the Haryasvas knowledge. They understood just by hearing his sutra. Kim asa karma bhavet. What's the use in all this fruit of activity, this karmic activity, even if it's very high and polished, even though it's good karma? What's the use? Where's the bhakti? So you have to know how to fight back with knowledge and how to take strength from vows. Just like on a fast day, Gaur Purnima, Janmashtami, these long fast days. You know how it feels, someone, the little kids, they can eat. Or sick devotees, they can eat. And you see the little kids with a nice plate of prasad, and your stomach starts rumbling. And then you're like, oh, it's a fast day, I can't. I gotta wait till midnight. And Jamal, I gotta wait till midnight. Because it's a vow, it's a vrata. Similarly, the initiation promises are vows. You can take strength from them. Don't become intimidated. That, oh, I'm feeling agitated, I'm feeling attraction. Therefore immediately I have to act on it. Oh. It's just a foregone conclusion. Attraction leads to action. There's no gap in between. Yes. The Shastra is telling you there is a big gap between, and in that big gap between is your opportunity. You take it that way. These attractions and agitations are going to come and go. Just like New Zealand weather. One day the sun is shining, the next moment it's raining, the next moment the sun is shining and it's raining. How many of you could flip out because of that? Maybe when you first come here, it takes a while for your body to get used to the changing, constantly changing climate. So often I notice persons who come here the first 2 years are constantly having colds and sick because their bodies are accustomed to continental weather patterns, which are such that you can predict them for the next 3 days, but not here. So, just like you tolerate the changing of the weather, similarly you tolerate the comings and goings of agitations. You don't have to act on it. It's normal to feel these things. You want to hear something that you might find surprising. Lord Chaitanya presented himself. He said, when I just hear the name of a woman, my mind and body undergo transformations. What to speak about when I see one? Now you may say, oh, Lord Chaitanya, he's just speaking like that. That's true in one way. But at the same time, Srila Prabhupada presented that as prime evidence of the fact that even a very advanced person feels things from material nature. He gave the example of Lord Chaitanya. That's proof. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada was making his case. It is not unusual. It is normal and natural to feel these attractions around you, especially of a certain type. But you don't act upon them, in that there's a gap between feeling and acting, and that gap is filled by knowledge. And with that knowledge, you practice spiritual practice. Spiritual practice means that my knowledge, I understand what's right. I'm going to mold my life, I'm going to act in such a way that this attraction is not fulfilled. That is practice. It's an alien concept to life today. Practice withstanding attraction. But that practice makes it such that gradually the agitation goes away. Gradually the material influences go away. Because practice means engaging in devotional service, thinking of Krishna's pleasure, and gradually the thoughts of Krishna's pleasure replace the material attraction. So the practice stage is so important, and that practice is based on knowledge. What was the situation in which Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was saying that statement? If I just hear the name, but to speak of, see the form, I feel bodily and mental transformations. Another time, Lord Chaitanya said, if I just see a mannequin, a doll of an attractive woman, oh, I feel mental and physical transformation. Of course, Lord Chaitanya has no material body. He's presenting himself as a bhakta. He's telling you, this is what it's like to be a devotee. And we can follow in Srila Prabhupada's footsteps, because he presented this example as evidence. Even Lord Chaitanya! Prabhupada was very encouraging and consoling. Even Lord Chaitanya would feel like, don't worry. So, the circumstances, well, that's a whole other lecture. Ramananda Roy and his handing of the Devadasis in the Jagannath Puri temple, who were going to perform a dance for the pleasure of Lord Jagannath. And they were just young, beautiful teenage girls. And Ramananda Roy was teaching them how to dance in order to prepare them for Lord Jagannath's pleasure. He would even bathe them and dress them. Lord Chaitanya explained to Pradyumna Mishra, only Ramananda Roy himself can understand the justification for doing this. He's his own prerogative. I myself, if I just hear the name, if I just see the form, there's mental and physical transformations. Ramananda Roy, he's doing these activities, preparing these young girls for Lord Jagannath's drama, for Jagannath's pleasure. He's like wood. He is totally unaffected. I can't do that. This is Lord Chaitanya's way of telling you, don't you even think about doing such a thing. Ramananda Roy is in a class of his own. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, Ramananda Roy is demonstrating the extreme heights of bhakti. This is how glorious Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita is. It's giving you the topmost,
outer limits of Bhakti. That's Raman Roy. And Lord Chaitanya explained, Raman Roy is in his spiritual body, seeing himself as a servant of the cowherd maidens of Vrindavan.
That's not me. I just hear the name, I just see the form, and something happens. Raman Roy, he's his own
prerogative. But then Lord Chaitanya said, I could guess, though. First he said, I don't understand it. He said, but I could guess that it's because of this.
And then Lord Chaitanya would give some Shastric evidence about how if someone hears about Krishna's Rasa Leela with a completely proper attitude,
then the heart becomes purified of contaminants. As Srila Prabhupada said, you have to be ready to take that medicine. You can't prematurely take that medicine. Otherwise, havoc is caused.
Just like there's various Ayurvedic medicines which you can't take until your system is strong enough, even though it is the cure for your disease.
Not even Ayurvedic medicine, also. Natural healing, even. Western pharmaceuticals, it could be like that. I just had a doctor tell me last week, there are toxins, but you can't clear them out now. First take this, and the next visit we'll work on that, because right now it's not ready for it.
So similarly, the ultimate cure of hearing Radha Krishna Leela is there, but the patient has to be ready, otherwise there's a disaster. So Lord Chaitanya began quoting verses like that. He said, I don't know why Ramana Roy doesn't, I don't know what the justification is. I know he's advanced enough, far beyond our understanding, to be his own prerogative. I don't understand it, but I know.
At the same time, if you asked me, I could pull out some Shastra, which gives the explanation. And that was the explanation that he gave.
So, once again, let us remember, it is not unusual to feel attracted, allured. That's the nature of this world, as Lord Chaitanya certifies. But there is a gap between feeling and acting. And in that gap is an immense opportunity to advance in Krishna consciousness. To show your real intentions. In other words, to show Krishna you care by withstanding the temptations. That shows you care. Just think, even in an ordinary material relationship, in the old-fashioned way, it doesn't happen now. A married man, is feeling some attraction to a woman at work. But he withstands the temptation because he wants to be true to his wife. And that's showing that he cares. I've got a wife, I got kids, I have to be honorable for them. I have my legitimate anchor, my ashram anchor, I've got to be true to that. That shows that you care, it shows your quality, it shows your integrity. So Krishna is also a person. Purushottama, the Supreme Person. We have everyday opportunities to, so to speak, show Krishna we care. Show our developing honor, our budding integrity. And it can be difficult sometimes. That's why the deities are there. You can go pray to the deities. Please save me from this material allurement. Beg from the bottom of your heart, and Krishna will save you. These are all the things we have going for us. The deities, the Hare Krishna mantra, the books with the topmost knowledge, and if you keep in wonderful association, inspiring association, you have every opportunity to withstand all these allurements. So finally, please don't be depressed. Don't be discouraged. See the opportunity in the gap. Exploit that gap between feeling attraction, material attraction, allurement, and acting upon it. In that gap is an enormous opportunity for practice. Practice makes perfect. For integrity. And for developing your attraction for Krishna.